Okay, good morning. The reason why my voice sounds a bit odd is because I catched a cold last week in Finland, so I'm really happy to be in warm Portugal. And look at the azure sky. You know, azure is actually the name for a certain type of blue, which I think is very odd because the sky is only blue if there is no cloud. Oh, it's gonna get back very fast, I think. Yeah. So I think we just, yeah. Perfect. So I'm gonna have a half an hour talking about Windows Azure, but before I do this, I also talk a little bit about cloud computing, because you need to understand the dynamics of cloud computing, the reasons why we're doing it, what we get from it, and how we are doing it. So that's how I start, and then the second half. It's really going to be about some of the details in a half an hour is maybe not the right thing, but a little bit about Windows Azure. And then in the afternoon, I really go into details. So why cloud computing? I think there are four dimensions that contribute to the fact that cloud computing is tremendously important for our industry. The first one is really around cost. Getting access to near to unlimited compute resources in the cloud. This is just unbelievable if you think about this, that you can start 20,000 servers for only one day, and you're just going to pay somewhere below $1,000 for this. This is just amazing. So you can do now stuff way cheaper than you could do this in the past. So it's really about cost. It's also about cost in storage, that you can store terabytes of data to a fairly low cost price. And it's hot storage. It's accessible because it's exposed through the internet. It's not on a tape or any other cold media. The second bit is risk mitigation. How many times in your career have you heard from someone, "I have this great idea, but I do not dare to invest into it. I do not pull my own money on the table, or the company you're working for is not willing to invest into this." Happened to all of us many times, I assume. So with cloud computing, again, you're not required to do this upfront commitment. So you take away the risk, and I think this is tremendously powerful as well. And then it's agility. I mean, we're in the software business. Who runs our software? An IT department or a hoster or just someone else? How many times haven't you been able to get the resources on a Sunday evening because you were playing around with a test environment just because no one was delivering it to you? How many times had you actually this delay in, "I have this idea, but I need to wait for another month until I have the servers in my data center to actually run the load tests"? All this kind of stuff that just slows you down is gone away because you're going to get access to resources at your fingertip. And then the last one, I think, it really has to do that as soon as you start to centralize stuff, you're obviously going to build up quite deep expertise because you can allow people to focus on a specific thing. So I would argue that you're going to get access to highly, highly scalable data centers that are maintained by people who are top experts in that field. I would challenge you to find similar resources within either Portugal or any other country that is able to run a data center at such a large scale, to such a low price, but in such a reliable way. So these are some of the dimensions as well. By the way, did you see none of the whys are technical? And the reason is, if you have enough money and if you can take all the risk on this planet. You can build your own unbelievable big data center, and you can deliver these resources to you as well. Since these are constraints which are real, the main driver for cloud computing and the adoption I see really comes more from the economical side and from the side that you can leverage new opportunities because you do not need to put the money up front on the table. So what do you get? If you really abstract this on a very high level, you're going to get something like servers in the cloud. You're going to get something like large-scale storage in the cloud. And you're also going to get an infrastructure that allows you to build systems which are highly scalable. So these are the three things you get from most cloud computing vendors. So compute really means, elastic compute really means that you tell the system how many nodes you need. If it is Sunday, only a few people are working on your infrastructure, you're actually going to have maybe 10 nodes. On a Monday morning, you scale it up to 25. You simply just tell, I need now 25 servers. And over Christmas, you're going to say, now I need 1,500. That is why it's called elastic. You adjust it to the need. And compute really just means you get access to something like a server in the cloud. Obviously very virtualized, very conceptualized, but that's the way you can think about it. Storage is really about highly scalable, cheap storage. So the cheap is an important bit to it. So you need to be able to store terabytes of data to an extremely low price. So that makes it very interesting to archive stuff there. That makes it interesting, for instance, even for you to use it as a backup scenario. Because you're going to get storage which is not only reliable, but it's also stored redundantly across different geos. And then the last bit is the network topology. I mean, everyone involved in writing highly scalable web system knows that as soon as it starts to grow, putting the load balancers in place and actually configure it in a way that it really is highly scalable is very close to an art. So having something in place that is doing this for you in an automatic fashion, and you just write your software that it applies to that predefined network topology, and you communicate, for instance, through queue instead to direct function calls, you can have now an application that scales near to infinitely on top of compute and the storage in the cloud. So how is this delivered to you? I think one of the great things really is, if you're playing around, I mean, you do not have rainy days in Portugal, I understand. But I'm coming from Switzerland, and just imagine when we have two weeks of nice weather in a row, then this is an exception of a century. That actually just happened the last 2 weeks. Now, the last weekend, I had a cold, so I was in bed. And the weather is going to turn this weekend to rain again. So what I'm going to do, obviously, I'm going to play around with my computer. And the great thing with cloud computing is I get access to these resources instantly, even on a Sunday afternoon. It's a self-service mechanism. You go there, you sign up, you play around, you think either, yes, my application seems to work, so I leave it there, or you're just going to scale it down to zero and you give another go maybe the next weekend. So the self-service aspect is tremendously important. You do not need to go to a retailer and buy something. You do not need to sign any contract negotiation. You sign up. You provide, obviously, your billing information. And then, from then on, you can spun up as many servers as you want. The second bit is the pay-as-you-go. It's an important dimension to it as well. that you only pay for what you use. So if I play around with my project and I play around on Sunday afternoon, then I only pay for the 3 hours my application was deployed on Sunday afternoon. Then I undeploy it throughout the week because I do not have time to work on it. And the next Saturday, if it's raining again, which I assume it's going to rain again, I can just restart my project and it starts to rebuild it again. So you decide when the stuff is running and you only get charged for the actual usage that you have. And the last bit is maybe also a differentiator between, if you know, for instance, Amazon's offering EC2, and if you compare this to Windows Azure, the cloud-managed aspect is maybe the main differentiator there. So what I mean with cloud-managed is you do not need to manage the operating system. You do not even have the access to manage your operating system. Windows Azure provides you with something that we call a platform where you just deploy applications towards it. And these applications can be .NET applications, PHP applications, or also Java applications. But we manage and maintain the operating system underneath it. We run it. You do not need to care about this. And this is, again, obviously a tremendous benefit for me if I have a project which kind of maybe runs as a marketing campaign, so I have it on between November, December, and then I want to rerun it again in March and April, there is no need for me to do any patches or updating or whatever. I just redeploy it again. And underneath, obviously, all the stuff is done by the cloud, in this case, Windows Azure. I was talking about scalability and also elasticity. I would like to give you some thought models around this. And what you see here are worldwide page views, so daily page views. And I took three very prominent application types. So it's CNN.com, it's that red line down here, Yahoo.com, and Facebook.com. Now, all these applications, they have to be, so they're basically built in a tremendously scalable way. Even if you look at CNN.com, writing a web application that kind of serves very close to 0.5% of the worldwide page views requires you to have a certain understanding of the web, and also a certain understanding to write applications which are fairly stateless. However, if you look at CNN.com, when you build this application, you do not need to factor in the requirement of growth, that you need to scale while you actually deploy it. So you most likely design your application, you have kind of an idea how many users you're going to have, and then the application scales for that amount of users. If you look what happens to Facebook, they kind of grew within 9 months from 2% of all worldwide page views up to more than 4%. Now, just imagine how big such an application is to serve 2% of all worldwide page views. And I start to imagine what it takes to scale this up within 9 months. So basically, you double this load. From a hardware perspective, from an infrastructure perspective, but also from the software paradigm perspective, the way you write the software. If you look at Yahoo.com, it's kind of the opposite round, isn't it? 2009... It was above 4%, and then it kind of dropped down to a little bit more than 2. I assume they just have half of the data centers maybe empty. So scalability really means that you can serve the load that that people throw at you. So your application is able to serve that load, and it also does it in an economical, sensible way. So if you throw in resources, you're going to have a linear proportional increase in performance. So if you throw in 10 more servers, it doesn't matter whether you already have thousands or you already have 10,000. The increase in performance should be kind of in the same ratio. If this is not the case, your system won't scale at a certain stage without spending a huge amount of money. The other thing is elasticity. And I think the great example is IRS in the US. I know you have also IRS here. So the great thing, I mean, if you get this contract, the great thing really is, if you need to provide this service, is you know how many people will file their tax returns. So that is fairly predictable. So one could say it's a fairly easy thing to write that system. Now, if you start to dig into it, you just see when the tax period ends in the US. So it's April. So the capacity planning becomes quite difficult, because I don't really know when people will file their taxes. But most likely, I know it's going to be very close to April. So if I'm now tasked to build the capacity in the data center for IRS, what am I going to do? Am I going to build it for the peak that I expect to happen with 90% of the load? Or am I going to build for an average and then I try to do something with that burst capacity? In any way, I'm most likely going to overspend on IT capacity. Except you would have something like this. So we have time and we have compute capacity. So this is our load trend. So we have a type of application and we kind of expect it kind of grows linear. The reality obviously is going to show us this. That is the capacity that we really require. So it goes up and down and up again. If you're tasked to do capacity planning for this, you always would have overcapacity. So you always would put more resources into this project than are actually needed. Because if you have undercapacity, you can't serve your customers. With cloud computing, the promise really is that you're able to adjust the IT capacity which is provided through the cloud ad hoc according to the need that you have, which then obviously means no upfront investment. I mean, if you want to start a fancy web shop, you can do this. If it has no traction, you're not going to pay a lot for it, besides obviously the development costs that you have. You actually do not pay for overcapacity here. However, you can serve when you would have undercapacity. You still can serve these customers. You scale it up. And ultimately, at the end, if the whole load drops again, you're just going to drop the number of instances that you run in the cloud. So this, I think, is tremendously sweet. For me, this is one of the big sweet spots that we have in cloud computing. If you now look at Windows Azure and how we deliver this to the users, there are three major boxes. It's the Windows Azure box, the SQL Azure box, and the so-called App Fabric box. Very abstract ways, you could say Windows Azure provides you with compute, elastic and scalable compute, and elastic and scalable storage. Not a relational database, storage. Blob storage, tables, and queues, but large scale. You can store petabytes of data in there to a fairly low price. SQL Azure provides you with a relational database. So basically a SQL server that runs in the cloud. You can have your application, which is installed on-premise, and you just change the connection string pointing towards SQL Azure. And last but not least, we have the App Fabric. Think about this like middleware in the cloud. The ability to send messages between different type of cloud application, messages between on-premise and cloud applications, and it also provides you with an identity federation system that can provide you smooth single sign-on scenarios between multiple cloud offerings. This is actually a sweet spot. Last week, I met a small company in Finland. They have 16 employees, and they're 100% cloud only. So what that means is the only piece of software that I have installed is unfortunately Skype. It's the only piece of software. And he is tremendously happy, but obviously, if you do a presentation around this, you think also about what bothers me. And the number one thing he was mentioning is onboarding and offboarding. If you have 20 cloud applications, whether you start with Hotmail, you're going to have a CRM system, you're going to have this, that, and that, you're soon going to end up with 20 different type of credentials. If you're not going to manage this, if you're not going to federate this from an application-to-application perspective. And that really is what the App Fabric helps you to do, identity federation in the cloud, and also from on-premise to off-premise. When I was talking with him about this, I mean, he was just saying, I want to have this. And he builds a SaaS application, so he will build this type of functionality in, which basically means, if you want to log in with your Facebook ID, that's fine. I can federate to Facebook. If you want to use your Live ID, I'm fine. And if you want to use your Active Directory credentials, I'm fine as well. I can basically federate all of them. On top, what you see is very important that it's not tied to Microsoft at all. So you obviously have a great experience if you use Visual Studio and .NET. But it also runs with PHP, Java, we run Tomcat on top of Azure, and furthermore, we have an Eclipse plugin, and there was just a new one actually released for PHP, I think yesterday or the day before. And the storage is accessible through RESTful APIs, so every platform that can talk XML over HTTP can access read and write data from Azure Storage. The way this works, and this is very high level, but when you think about Windows Azure, you do not need to think about servers. Servers is a concept that does not exist in Windows Azure for you as a user. We provide you with instances, and these instances are based on a virtual machine. So what you see here is the fabric that contains of role instances, which are either worker roles or web roles. A worker role is an instance that runs in the context of IIS. So you have all the capabilities of IIS. So if you write an ASP.NET application, you will deploy this towards a web role. If you write a batch job that does some massive compute on top of storage, then you would deploy that application towards a worker role. If you want to deploy Tomcat, you also deploy that towards a worker role. So what you see then is you have this fabric and then this massive collection of servers here, and that blue thing is called the fabric agent. So we have this guy, which is called the Fabric Controller, that communicates with the Fabric Agents and then identify where your VMs are running. So you do not have any direct control about the hardware. We're going to move that stuff around. That's the way we build in fault tolerance and all that stuff. It might be your stuff runs over there. We spun up a second bit over here. We shut this bit down, and the load balancer navigates it to this resource. And that's all done by the fabric controller. For storage, the fabric controller actually observes what type of data is used very close by and moves them to nodes which are close, so you're even going to be faster there. But that is the sophistication which is in this fabric controller. If you look into compute, as I was saying, the one thing you need to understand there is you have these two roles. And every request that comes from the internet, from outside, either to this web role or this worker role, goes through a load balancer. So that means, this is the network topology bit that I was referring before. You deploy one web role as your, that might be your front-end web shop. And then you deploy maybe two different type of worker roles. One is the shopping cart, and the other one is the checkout mechanism. So what then happens is that you can scale up this web role, your web shop. You can say, now I have 10 instances of that role. Let's just have 15. But for the shopping cart, I don't see way more load, so I'm fine. I keep this actually running on that particular worker role with just two instances. And because every external connection goes through a load balancer, this is completely transparent to your users. But unfortunately, it also means that you need to write the software in a way that you do not keep state on an instance. Every connection you make to storage goes through a load balancer, which means the underlying system can rearrange storage in a highly efficient way, because you're always going to hit the load balancer first. That then pings you towards the node. Talking about storage, there are four storage concepts that we have in Windows Azure, and then we have the fifth, which is SQL Azure. So the four concepts are blob storage to store binary data, like your movies for streaming, and we also provide a content delivery network on top of this, which means you can use more than 20 data centers around the globe to cache your content if you want to stream it globally. The second storage mechanism is tables, so you can store name-value pairs. They're not relational tables. It's very important. And there are also limited transaction and query capabilities available. The third mechanism is queues. And the queues really are for inter-role communication. If one worker role wants to communicate to another worker role, you use a queue. If one web role wants to place a shopping basket into the checkout process, you're going to use a queue. And the last bit really is a drive. Think about this like you can use normal NTFS APIs. Create file, close file, read file, and so forth. And the way this is implemented, it's basically just on top of a blob storage. So it's stored as a blob storage, but mounted as an NTFS drive. So it's kind of a different conceptual view of a blob storage. So these are the four things we have: blob, table, queues, and drives. If you put that all together, what you're really going to see is that your applications are going to be written according to that topology. You define what are the web roles, what are the front-end serving roles. You define what are the different tasks that I'm going to have that I need maybe to scale independently. I want to, for instance, the recommendation engine of my shopping website needs a different scaling than my checkout mechanism. because there obviously there is no need that I put them into the very same thing. Communication between these two instances or these different type of roles goes to queues and storage. So you would, for instance, store the shopping cart, you would store in a table, which is stored in Azure Tables. And then you would send for checkout a message which just refers to that table entry. So the checkout role would then pick up that message, would then read from the table, and would then write maybe some additional results into another table entry. And the front end, when it's refreshing, will then just pick up that information from that table again. So it's extremely loosely coupled, and every entity you can scale up or scale down depending on the need of your application. And as you see, every external entry towards a worker role, a web role, or also towards storage goes through load balancers. The way we charge is based on three dimensions. Compute, so how many hours do you use our instances, depending on an instance size, we're going to have different prices. It's about storage, how much storage do you use, and how many transactions do you run on top of the storage. And with transactions, I don't mean atomic transactions, I just mean read-write transactions. And the last bit is bandwidth, how much data goes into our data center and how much data will be retrieved from our data center. And that is going to be a monthly bill then. So to really conclude, Windows Azure is a platform as a service. You're not deploying a virtual image to the cloud. You're deploying your application together with a configuration that defines how many instances you want from every different role. We manage the underlying operating system, and we also manage the version of a .NET framework. So you can select, you want to have version 3.5, or you can select version 4, and based on this, your application will run on top of this. Furthermore, you can say, I want my application run in Europe, so the backup, your data is then going to be stored in Dublin and Amsterdam, and the backup is going to be stored vice versa. Or you could say, I want to run my application in Northern America and in APAC, and then also in Europe. So you specify where it runs, and you specify what type of version you want to run. And the rest is really done by the platform. You just upload one package, which contains obviously of the binaries of the configuration, and the rest will be taken care of. I think the best advantage being a .NET developer is that all you know is actually valid in Azure as well. So that doesn't mean that you can write the same type of applications, but if you know how to scale a web application, the same principles apply there as well. It's ASP.NET, it's C#, it's Visual Studio, you have everything integrated, you have client libraries. Last week I talked to an ISV called Sitecore. So they deliver a worldwide content management system. And I was amazed. So he was delivering a session on the experiences they made with Windows Azure. And they moved their content management system towards Azure. Can you imagine that they had zero code changes in their application to deploy from on-premise to Windows Azure? I'm not saying this is for everyone. As soon as you use strange stuff, that, you know, ties instances together, if you have very strange session state and all that stuff, that will take longer. But for them, they already had a highly scalable application. It took them zero code changes. Then they moved the SQL Server to the cloud, so SQL Azure. And that was a little bit more tricky because there are a little bit more constraints what SQL Azure provides you in the cloud towards the SQL Server offering. But knowing, you know, SQL, knowing .NET, knowing the development environment gives you a tremendous head start to develop applications in the cloud. And it's also open, so it's RESTful APIs are provided, PHP is available as well on top of Fast CGI. That is really one of the major benefits, I think, for you. And then last, it's this symmetry I was talking about. An application that runs on Windows Azure also runs on your local on-premise software. You could, for instance, say, I'm only going to use storage in the cloud. And then over time, you're actually going to use also the compute in the cloud. And then you can switch back again because it's symmetric. So my suggestion really is go to WindowsAzure.com and have a look. Use one of the introductory offerings that are there and play around. And maybe you're going to have some rain on a Saturday or Sunday. And you're going to have the enjoyment of writing your first cloud application. I'm going to have a 1 hour deeper dive on these topics. And I will also show a nice little Hello Portugal on Windows Azure, which is running in the cloud. So now I wish, is it lunchtime? Oh, no, so no lunch yet then.